So we're going to talk about the history of Afghanistan today. We're going to start to talk about it. So I'm going to do, I think, five lessons. And I guess the theme is understanding the times. So Afghanistan's been a hot spot for about 40 years in the world and more, but really a hot spot for the last 40 or so. And pretty much a constant war for all that time. So it's also, I was looking at the World Watch list, which is a list of the worst places for Christians to be. Afghanistan is number 2 right now after North Korea. It's a very, very, very bad place to be a Christian, which is kind of surprising, considering of all that money we've been putting in there as America. But anyway, if we're gonna eventually evangelize Afghanistan, we better understand their culture and their history so we can know how to do it wisely. Also, some of you young guys might end up someday being in positions of influencing American foreign policy toward Afghanistan and so forth. We're going to see over the last, half century, the West, and longer, last couple centuries actually, the West has had a very, not had very intelligent foreign policy toward Afghanistan. Really just a lack of understanding of how that region works. So here's the lesson plan. Today we're going to talk about geography, early history, and Islamification. So basically creation until 1700. So we're going to, as far as the history goes, we're going to just kind of do a flyby and see a couple main points from the pre-1700 time period. And then the rest of the lessons we're going to talk about since 1700s. Lesson 2 is going to be the Durranis and the British influence, 1700s to 1931. The Durranis came to power roughly the same time that the British started to have a major influence in India. And so the fascinating history that we're going to talk about there between those two. 1931 to 1979, that was 1931 is the end of the British control over Afghanistan. 1979 was the Soviet invasion. The period between them, Afghanistan was independently controlled. They had their own monarchy, basically. And that wasn't under any type of foreign influence. And there was a conflict that developed there that still has implications today between the cities, which became very centralized and secular, versus the countryside, which stayed very tribal and very conservative Muslim. So we have to understand that if we're going to understand Afghanistan today. Then number 4 is the Soviet invasion and the rise of the Taliban, 1979 to 2001. And everyone knows what happened in 2001. The World Trade Center was attacked, and that was the beginning of the direct American involvement in Afghanistan. So the last lesson is then going to be the American invasion and the current plight of Christians. So I also want to talk about the current situation of Christians in Afghanistan. Depending on what you want to call it, but boots on the ground in Afghanistan, and we're going to try to see some things from more of an Afghan point of view rather than a U.S. point of view. And to them, it is most definitely an invasion of their territory. They see any Christian or Westerner as an infidel. So, these couple of books I just wanted to show you that are some of the main sources that I've had. This one here kind of got me started on Afghan history, kind of got me into it. It's called Ghost Wars by Steve Cole. He's kind of an investigative journalist. It's called The Secret History of the CIA, Afghanistan, and Bin Laden. from the Soviet invasion to September 10th, 2001. So that's all about the history of the CIA's involvement, especially in the Soviet era and with the rise of the Taliban. Really, really fascinating history. This one here is called Games Without Rules, and it's written by Tamim Ansari, who is an Afghan, native Afghan, and kind of his big thing is that all the histories of Afghanistan, in English at least, are written by Westerners, and he doesn't think they get it right. So the reason he calls it Games Without Rules is the national sport in Afghanistan is this game. It's kind of like soccer, except you play it with a dead goat, and you have two goals, and then you have two teams of horsemen, and the only rule is just get the goat into the other person's goal, basically. So otherwise, you can do whatever you want. So he sees in that an analogy to the history of Afghanistan. Conflicts have been really no holds barred type of thing. So, then lastly, this one here is a more scholarly work. Got a lot of information in it, written by an American, Jonathan Lee, and this just came out last year. So, got a lot of the more modern history, post American involvement. So that's kind of where I'm getting my information, as well as Wikipedia. So hopefully my sources are good. First of all, we're going to talk about geography. So yeah, that is one of the most important things when you study Afghan history is the geography, because everything centers around the geography over there. So first thing is, can anybody tell me which one of these countries is Afghanistan? Anybody know? This one right here? Nope. Yeah, that's Afghanistan right there. All right, so someone knows what this is, right? One of you boys. Come on. India, that's right. How about this one? Very important regional player right here. Anyone know? It's Iran. Yep, Iraq is this one. Iran is this one. All right? Up here, surely we know what this is. Russia, that's right. All right, let's just switch to the one with names here. All right, so the three, right from the beginning here, notice the three kind of major regional powers. There's India to the east, Iran, or ancient Persia, to the west, and then Russia to the north. And a lot of these countries in here, like between Russia and Afghanistan, seems like a long way. They only came about very recently. Russian influence has always been over this area a lot of times. And during the Soviet Union, these were all part of the Soviet Union right here. So you might say, China, why aren't they more of a regional power? Now, they're a pretty big power, and they even have a little border right here with Afghanistan. And the reason is because you have the Himalayas right here. Kind of divides China, India, and this region here. So it's just really hard to get from China to Afghanistan. You've got to go up around or down underneath. It just didn't happen historically very much. All right. This is Afghanistan. This is a topographical map. For those of you who don't know what that is, that's elevation. So white is the high points, and green is the low points. So right away you can see that the dominant feature of Afghanistan is this mountain range right here. It's one big mountain range down the middle, and that's called the Hindu Kush mountain range. The Hindu Kush. So this is the Himalayas right up here. This is the Hindu Kush. And it divides Afghanistan into basically four sections. You've got these valleys in here, and this pass, this is called the Khyber Pass, over toward India. And this region here, and right there, we'll see on another map later, is Kabul, which is the capital. So remember that city, but that region there is fairly fertile in those valleys. And up here to the north, you've got this city, Mazar-e Sharif, it's called. And you can see there's very good land up top there. But it's very hard to get from Kabul to there. Until recently, the Soviets actually built a big road so they could get through there. But historically, there was no good way to get through those mountains. So oftentimes, this area was under Indian control, and this area up here was under the control of these guys up here. So there you got two regions, the northern, north of the Hindu Kush, eastern. Then you got over here, this is a city called Herat. And here's Iran right here. So you can see that one is kind of more part of this region here. So historically, Persia very often controlled Herat. And then you've got the south. Down here, this region is a plains, more desert region. Right here is another big city, that's Kandahar. And so you've got kind of these four regions. And one of the things I want to point out today is that historically we're going to see those regions were often not controlled by the same power. Very often, they weren't even thought of as the same region until just recently. Today, you mean? Well, I'm going to get to that in a minute. I'm going to show you an ethnic map. We'll see. Now, two rivers that are important to remember here. This river right here in Pakistan is the Indus River. It's the biggest river in this whole basin right here, the northern India basin. This big river. And historically, that has been a major geographical barrier, like you were talking about in the sermon. A lot of conquerors from this side of things, from the west, stopped at the Indus, not at this mountain range. So this is a mountain range that the modern Afghan border kind of goes along a mountain range. Historically, that has not been a very prominent line. It's been the Indus River. Yes, as we'll see that in a minute. Along the northern, this river here forms the northern border of Afghanistan. It's called the Amu Darya River. And so that border there makes a lot of sense. That has been a historical boundary where people have stopped. Yeah. Yeah. The other goes over to the lake over here, or whatever that is, the big lake. Why can't I think what it is? Is it the Black, or is it the Caspian? Caspian Sea, I think. And there's a smaller lake that it goes into. Yes. Yep. It flows, starts up here in the Himalayan region, comes down through the plains, and this whole area up here is very fertile. This is a political map. So right there you got the Hindu Kush, Kabul, capital, Kandahar, Herat, and Mazar-e Sharif, four major cities. I wouldn't worry about looking at the rest of them. Or trying to remember them at least. Those are the four ones that have historically been the most prominent. Just going to go back here for a second. Why those four cities? Why those places? Well, the reason largely it has to do with trade routes. So if you're trying to get to the old Silk Road routes, most of them went north of the Hindu Kush and then found their way through around the Himalayas into China up here. So they came down, though, along the Amu Darya River. And so that's why that northern region became prominent as a civilization. On the other hand, if you're trying to get to India, going up here is not going to do any good into China. You got to come down under the Hindu Kush. So maybe through Herat, if you're coming from Russia or from Persia or Iran, you're coming to come down here. And you're going to end up at Kandahar. And once you're at Kandahar, there's two things you can do. There's two passes through this mountain range. There's the Khyber Pass up here, so you can either go north up these valleys and then through Kabul and then over the Khyber Pass, or you can go through the other pass down here. It's called the Kashaki Pass. But you got to go through Kandahar, either one of those. And so that's why that city is right there. So trade routes, very important. Here's the ethnic map. As we're going to see, lots of conquerors have come through, and it's made a very ethnically diverse region. Let's see here. The most prominent tribe in Afghanistan historically, the most powerful one, has been this one right here, this tan. They're called the Pushtuns, or the Pashtuns, depending on how you transliterate it. The Pushtun tribe, and we're going to talk about them a lot. That's where the Durrani dynasty came from. So southern Afghanistan is dominated. And look here. They don't stop at this line. They stop at the Indus River. So that line, this line we're going to talk about, was drawn by the British. From an ethnic standpoint, it makes absolutely no sense. It should have come over to the Indus River. And the Pushtuns here consider themselves, you know, part of the same tribe as the Pushtuns over there. So Pakistani government, this area here is Pakistan, has had trouble, you know, with that region. And so we're going to see later, when the U.S. went in and kicked the Taliban out, the Taliban were Pushtuns, they just went across the border over here, and that's where they've been operating from. So Pushtuns are the big tribe. In the middle here, the mountain peoples, you might say, are the Hazaras. And they are, if I'm remembering right, the Pushtuns are Shia Muslims, and the Hazaras are Sunni Muslims. Or I might have that backwards, but they're different branches. So they do not get along, those two tribes. And that becomes important later on. Up to the north, you've got the Tajiks. And right there is Tajikistan, so that makes sense. You can see why there's Tajiks up there. These are the Uzbeks, I believe. Oh, yep, the yellow is the Uzbeks. And then the pink there is the Turkmen. So you got Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan up there. That's why. See how ethnically diverse this is? Down here, you've got the Indian. These are the Punjabi here. You can hear the Indian ring to that. And then down here is the Sindh, the Sindhi people. And then you've got the Baloks in here. You might say, why wouldn't there be some fighting between the Baloks and the Pushtuns maybe? Well, there's a desert right here that kind of, so they don't mix too much. There's a natural barrier down here in the southern Afghanistan. That's kind of the main sketches of geography and ethnicities, and we're going to come back to all this as we go forward because it is absolutely critical. Let me see here. I think you might be right about that. Though according to this, the Punjabi are their own tribe or their own ethnicity. Is Sikhs a religion?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know a ton about that. Okay. So I have come across that in my readings, definitely come across Sikhs, but I haven't looked into a lot of what they are.
It just seems to me that it's Sikhs that end up fighting with the Pakistani most of the time because they're border conflict.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm thinking.
Yeah. You might be right that the Sikhs are more in this region over there. That could very well be. There's an Indian province called Punjab, the Punjab, or state, I guess they call it. And I think but I don't know how all that works. So, yes. The mountains themselves. These people right here, not probably the peaks, you know, but in the valleys more. They are populated in there largely by these Hazara people. But yeah, it's not, it wouldn't be as dense, you know, in that region, but they're definitely there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And settler nomadic, there's a mix. Historically, there have been, even within the same tribes, there have been the nomads and there have been the settlers. And they actually got along pretty well. Like, the nomads would come through and, you know, they would trade with bring the goods that you couldn't get from the local town. And they actually got along quite well. This is the Khyber Pass, just to give you a little idea of what it looks like. That's the main road between Pakistan and Afghanistan. Goes between Kabul and Peshawar is the other city. This is Kabul. This is the main city today. See how it's built right into the side of the hills and stuff. This is up north in one of the valleys. This is the Panjshir Valley, which we're going to talk about when we get to the Soviets. But look how fertile that is. It's actually very, very good land. This is down in the south, down by Kandahar. Very arid, but it can be irrigated. You got some good rivers down there, and you can see it's very green until you stop irrigating, and then it's just dead. So as long as it's taken care of, it's actually pretty good land. So let's just talk about the early history. This is going to be a very quick survey, starting with Alexander the Great. So this is Alexander the Great's empire. You can see all the way over to the Indus River right there. So very natural barrier. But you can see he conquered the whole area. Up here you've got this civilization called Bactria. So north of the Hindu Kush in ancient times was called Bactria. And we're going to talk about that more. So there's the Amu Darya. So there's the top of modern Afghanistan. You can see he was well up above that. Aerial sea. There we go. That was the question from before somebody. The Amu Darya goes up to the aerial sea. Okay. This is modern Afghanistan, just again show you. Alexander was all the way over to this area. He definitely had this area under his thumb. Aftermath of the Greek conquest, Alexander dies about 3 years later, and the Seleucids take over. So they took over the Persian side of Alexander's empire. And the Seleucids control the area until about 250 BC, when Bactria secedes. You remember the Bactrians are north of the Hindu Kush? And they form the Greco-Bactrian kingdom. So this, we still got a Greek-influenced kingdom up there. This is the Greco-Bactrian kingdom. You can see they got a pretty big area there. They really did well for themselves. And all the southern plains of Afghanistan were definitely under their control. They kind of stopped right at that mountain range there. But over here, they kind of went over to the Indus. So they kind of control the area for the next couple hundred years, and until the Kushans arrive. So the Kushans take over Bactria around 30 AD, so this is right around the time of Christ, right? So the Kushans, no one's quite sure where they came from, but they were kind of more nomadic people, and they're thought to have come from China, over top of the Himalayas, and then down, and the first people they ran into were the Bactrians. So they kind of took over that area. And then they kept coming south. And eventually they ended up in India. So this is kind of their path more than... I don't think they ever controlled an area this big. But they kind of just went down and over the course of a couple hundred years. And then ended up in India. So Kushans ruled the area for about 200 years, more or less. And the important thing to know about the Kushans is they spread Buddhism in Afghanistan. And Afghanistan has a very strong Buddhist history. So one of the things that you may or may not have heard about is when there were these huge Buddhist statues, almost like Mount Rushmore, carved into the mountains, many stories tall. When the Taliban took over, they blew those up. So one of the things, the leader of the Taliban said that he was confused as to why they could they pretty much were doing whatever they wanted. But as soon as they blew up some Buddhist statues, the whole world was in an outcry. That they were killing tons of people. But anyway, got the whole scientific or archaeological community in an uproar. But those came from these Kushans that were coming through. And Buddhism stuck around for a long time. I think there's still a Buddhist minority in Afghanistan. Church tradition says that Thomas, the Apostle Thomas, preached in Bactria over this time. I don't know if there's any real evidence, but that's what they say. It seems pretty likely that he might have made it over there. So that takes us to the Sassanian Empire. The Sassanids were the last of the pre-Islamic Persian empires. So Persia, like we were talking about in the sermon, the Babylon region, there was a number of empires that came out of there, and the Sassanian Empire was the last one before Islam took over the area. So around 230 AD, they pushed their empire all the way again to the Indus River. This is their empire, all the way over. Right here's the Indus. Here's the Hindu Kush right here. So just to give you some context again, over here, the Sassanians are fighting the Romans and later the Byzantines. So that's what's happening over here. This was contested territory with the Romans and the Byzantines and Egypt and so forth. On this side of things, they were conquering all the way over to the Indus River. It's kind of interesting. We don't often hear about what goes on this end of the Persian empires. But that's what was happening. So the Sassanids more or less ruled the area for the next 400 years. There was this constant back and forth. This is a way oversimplification, obviously. But there was always, smaller kingdoms cropping up and being put down, depending on how strong the Sassanians were at any given time. But so the Hephthalite kingdom was in Bactria over this time, and the Hindu Shahi dynasties from India, they both competed with the Sassanids. And they would go back and forth, and sometimes they would pay tribute one way, and sometimes they'd pay tribute the other way, depending on who was, had the bigger army at the time. So this period, from about 250 to 650 AD, was possibly the high point of Christianity in Afghanistan. By the 5th century, there were at least 4 Nestorian bishoprics in western Afghanistan, mostly centered around Herat. Remember, Herat is the one that's right next to modern-day Iran, so much more accessible from the western side of things. Nestorianism is considered to be a heresy. It's by Western Christians, and it was pretty much wiped out by Islam later on because they were Nestorian strongholds were in Africa and in Middle East, and when Islam came through, they were pretty much just completely wiped out. But they were a Christian sect nonetheless, and sad to say, this seems to have been the high point of Christianity in the area. Here again is Herat. So this area here was the main Christian influence. It doesn't seem like Christianity ever made it much to Kandahar or Kabul. There's not much of a population there. So Christianity never seems to have made a large impact on the area. And that brings us to the Islamic takeover. So the Sassanian Empire was overrun by the Muslim Arabs between 600 and 650. They came through and just destroyed the Sassanian Empire completely. They conquered Herat around 652, thus effectively ending the Christian influence there. When the Muslims conquered an area, usually what they would do is they'd make some forced conversions, and then mainly they just put a head tax on everybody else. So you could be a Christian, but you had to pay like a 10% tax. So, the Christians would usually either move out or make a token conversion and eventually just be assimilated. So, over the next 500 years, Muslim conquest slowly turned the area predominantly Muslim. So it did take a long time before Islam they got Herat right away because that's over by Persia. But for them to get over to Kandahar and Kabul, which Kabul was under the Hindu influence right now in the 600s and 700s, those Hindu dynasties, you know, they have a very easy road over to Kabul through the Khyber Pass. So they held on to that for a long time. But eventually, around 1100 AD, Islam completely conquered the whole area. So just remember that. Islamification of Afghanistan is critical for understanding its modern history. You know, if you think about we're going to talk a lot about the Soviet invasion. You know, we might say, oh, the Afghans are fighting for their national freedom, the way we would think. They don't want the foreigners coming in. That's not the way the Afghans think about it. They think about it as the atheist infidels are coming into our country, and we are fighting for God, and we're going to send them out. It's less of a nationalistic mindset as a religious mindset. So that's an example of how we need to understand this culture to understand the history and the motivation. The Mongol invasion. So we get a surprise about 1220. The Mongols just swept through, and they ruled the area for, 40 years. Kind of a flash in the pan. This was their their empire. Huge. Look at that. China, Europe, Middle East, all the way. A huge empire that they conquered, but they didn't hang on to it very long. Here's the Indus River. See, they kind of stopped there in those mountains and then in this area. They came through, wiped out a bunch of cities. They say they killed everybody completely in Kandahar, like just wiped everybody out to the last man. That was after, so they conquered them initially, then there was a little bit of a rebellion, and then they came through and wiped everybody out. But it didn't last too long, and the next empire was the Mughal Empire. The Mughals were an Indian Muslim empire, so northern India. They controlled eastern Afghanistan in the 1600s. So now we're getting up to more modern history. Here's the Mughal Empire. So Delhi was kind of their stronghold. But you can see here's Kabul, Kandahar, all that eastern Afghanistan they controlled for a lot of the time of the 1600s. They were fighting another. This Safavid Empire was a Muslim empire in Persia. They went back and forth over this time period. Anyway, that brings us up to about 1700. That's just a quick flyby of all the empires that have come and gone through Afghanistan. So the take-home points here. Afghanistan has repeatedly been overrun by regional powers. This is just as a way of thinking about it. The Kushans and the Mongols from the north, the Greeks and the Sassanians from the west, the Shahis and the Mughals from the east. Back and forth. Afghanistan is right in the intersection of where you have to, if you're an empire in any region, you've got to go through there to get to the other guys. So that region didn't very often in history produce a strong empire centered there. Generally, it was Persians, Northerners, Russians or whatever, Mongols, or the Indians, that were the centers of power that were coming through. Another point is that they're ethnically diverse, very diverse. The only thing that holds peoples of Afghanistan together in modern history is religion. It's not ethnicity. There's not a nationalistic sense. It's a religious sense. And again, not thought of as a single country or region until very recently. We saw that, the Bactria area was kind of its own area. The Indian side in Kabul was kind of its own region. The south was kind of its own region. And there was, when a power came in, they didn't feel the need necessarily to conquer the whole country. They would conquer a region, and it made sense. Like, there was no country of Afghanistan until recently. And then lastly, most conquerors exacted tribute from major cities, but few tried to administrate or control the local populations. So conquerors could come and go, and some of these villages, or a lot of these villages out in the mountains or valleys, they might not even know. You had your major cities like Kandahar, Kabul, Herat, and the conqueror comes through, he smashes the city, he says, now you're going to pay me tribute, or I'll come back. And that was the end of that. They didn't try to set up an administrative system over Afghanistan. That only came in the modern era, where people have tried to do that. And that flyby brings us to this guy. This guy is called the father of modern Afghanistan. And his name is Ahmad Shah Durrani. And he was the founder of the Durrani dynasty. And so we're going to talk about him next time. It was kind of a lot of information. But anyone have any questions? Well, there's in the period, let's say during the Clinton administration, in the period before 9/11, there was the mantra of the U.S. government was Afghan self-determination, is what they called it. And so the goal was, to let Afghanistan kind of self-determine its government. And that was happening, except that the power that rose in Afghanistan was called the Taliban, and they were an extremely conservative Islamic force, a Pashtun force that took over most of the country, and a lot of the world was moving towards looking at them as a legitimate power, and a lot of people thought that they would moderate and become like Saudi Arabia. So they thought they would follow that trajectory. What happened was they started harboring bin Laden. We all know who Osama bin Laden was. And the United States tried to use diplomatic ways to force them to give over bin Laden. It turned out the Taliban hated America just as much as bin Laden did. And so they said, no, we're not, we don't care. So once the 9/11 event happened, America decided, well, Afghan self-determination went awry, so we are going to go in and help them to self-determine themselves in our favor, basically. And that's what we've been doing ever since. So ostensibly the reason we're in Afghanistan is because to overthrow the Taliban, because they were harboring our enemies. And the problem is that the Taliban has a lot of grassroots Pashtun support. And like we saw that ethnic map, they were able to move and operate out of Pakistan. Pakistan's government has a very hard time dealing with that because they've already got this somewhat discontent Pashtun population along that border. They're not very motivated to crack down. It's a really difficult situation to try to find a good solution for America. The fear is, of course, if we pull out now, the Taliban's going to take back over. We're going to be right back where we were. What do you do? Doesn't seem to be a good way out.
Regardless of the reality of the borders of Afghanistan, Pakistan,
I believe, after reading all that I have, that in my lifetime there will be major shakeups in the lines in that area. We'll see, but I would not be at all surprised if things are majorly changed in my lifetime, especially as the United States declines in its power in that area. Our ability to enforce those lines is going to decline. Basically, yeah.
So, is it fair to say that the removal of the Muslim influence will be by force? Or how do you eradicate enmity? It arose by force, their enmity toward the West.
Right. Well, one thing that was interesting to me is that it took 500 years for Islam to make it basically from Herat to Kabul. It did not happen in one big conquest. However, what happened was, as you know, the Muslim armies got advanced, you know, the local populations were forcibly converted, and but now it's become very much. So that was approximately 600 years ago. You know, not 600. We're talking about 1100 to today, 1,000 years. My bad. Okay, Islam is now the culture of that area. It's going to be very hard to root out. Christianity has no mechanism for forcible conversion. And I don't know that most other religions have mechanisms for, like, the Islam developed this system of basically some forcible conversion, some taxation conversion, but then the death penalty for converting away. So in that way, they're able to, once they get you, even if it's economically, once you make that token conversion, you can never leave. So how is Christianity going to come back into this area? That's one of the questions I want to raise in the study, is how can we do this? There is pretty much no Christian history in Afghanistan, barring a little smidgets, you know, here or there. Today, there's only one Catholic church in Afghanistan. It's in the Italian embassy, and there is no Protestant churches in the whole of Afghanistan. So there's not even a toehold, you know? What are you going to do? Well, there are some people that there's very little data, because it's all under the radar. But, you know, I've read some stuff that there's a very strong underground church there. It's growing a lot. Perhaps there's an opportunity, because it's been a war zone. You know, maybe there's a lot of people that would be open to the gospel who might not be otherwise. It's been a constant war zone for like 40 years. So maybe. I'm not saying there's no Christians there. What I'm saying is they've got pretty much no cultural influence. It's such a small minority and such an oppressed minority. And in the history of Afghanistan, Christianity has had almost no impact. There was one guy I was reading. I'll just say this. There's one guy I was reading about this week who... So the Safavid Empire that was fighting the Mughals, they also had conquered Georgia on the other side of their empire. So they took the Georgian leader and a bunch of mercenaries from him, made them all convert, brought them over to Afghanistan and said, "We can't, you take care of this place." And but they say that he remained a Christian because when he died, they found a cross under his clothes and like a psalter or something. But on the other hand, when you look at his policies, you got to wonder how Christian he really was, because he seemed to be just as brutal as the people that he was fighting. But stuff like that, there's some documentation, but no real influence of any size. But there's definitely Christians there. All right, well, thanks. Next time we're going to talk a lot about this guy, the Durranis and the British. The British were the ones who drew the lines of modern Afghanistan and were extremely influential in the area. We're going to see how their foreign policy worked. It's very, very, very interesting.